Chapter 19. The same morning found Michael Wenton Weeks in something of an odd mood. You would need to know him fairly well to know that it was an especially odd mood, because most people regarded him as being a little odd to start with. Few people knew him that well. His mother, perhaps, but there existed between them a state of cold war, and neither had spoken to the other now in weeks. He also had an elder brother, Peter, who was now tremendously senior in the Marines. Apart from at their father's funeral, Michael had not seen Peter since he came back from the Falklands, covered in glory, promotion, and contempt for his younger brother. Peter had been delighted that their mother had taken over Magna, and had sent Michael a regimental Christmas card to that effect. His own greatest satisfaction still remained that of throwing himself into a muddy ditch and firing a machine gun for at least a minute. And he didn't think the British newspaper and publishing industry, even in its current state of unrest, was likely to afford him that pleasure, at least until some more Australians moved into it. Michael had risen very late, after a night of cold savagery and then of troubled dreams, which still disturbed him now in the late morning daylight. His dreams had been filled with the familiar sensations of loss, isolation, guilt, and so forth, but had also been inexplicably involved with large quantities of mud. By the telescopic power of the nightmare of mud and loneliness had seemed to stretch on for terrifying, unimaginable lengths of time, and had only been concluded by the appearance of slimy things with legs that had crawled in the slimy sea. This had been altogether too much, and he had woken with a start in a cold sweat. Though all the business with the mud had seemed strange to him, the sense of loss, of isolation, and above all the aggrievement, the need to undo what had been done, these had all found an easy home in his spirit. Even the slimy things with legs seemed oddly familiar, and ticked away irritably at the back of his mind while he made himself a light breakfast, a piece of grapefruit and some China tea, allowed his eyes to rest lightly on the arts pages of the Daily Telegraph for a while, and then rather clumsily changed the dressing on the cuts on his hand. These small tasks accomplished, he was then in two minds as to what to do next. He was able to view the events of the previous night with a cool detachment that he would not have expected. It had been right, it had been proper, it had been correctly done. But it resolved nothing. All that mattered was yet to be done. Or what? He frowned at the odd way his thoughts ebbed and flowed. Normally he would pop along to his club at about this time. It used to be that he would do this with a luxurious sense of the fact that there were many other things that he should be doing. Now there was nothing else to do, which made time spent there, as anywhere else, hang somewhat heavy on his hands. When he went, he would do as he always did, indulge in a gin and tonic and a little light conversation, and then allow his eyes to rest gently on the pages of the Times Literary Supplement, Opera, The New Yorker, or whatever else fell easily to hand. But there was no doubt that he did it these days with less verve and relish than previously. Then there would be lunch. Today he had no lunch date planned, again, and would therefore probably have stayed at his club and eaten a lightly grilled Dover sole with potatoes garnished with parsley and boiled to bits, followed by a large heap of trifle, a glass or two of Sancerre, and coffee, and then the afternoon with whatever that might bring. But today he felt oddly impelled not to do that. He flexed the muscles in his cut hand, poured himself another cup of tea, looked with curious dispassion at the large kitchen knife that still lay by the fine bone china teapot, and waited for a moment to see what he would do next. What he did next, in fact, was to walk upstairs. His house was rather chill in its formal perfection, and looked much as people who buy reproduction furniture would like their houses to look, except, of course, that everything here was genuine. Crystal, mahogany, and Wilton, and only looked as if it might be fake because there was no life to any of it. He walked up to his workroom, which was the only room in the house that was not sterile with order, but here the disorder of books and papers was instead sterile with neglect. A thin film of dust had settled over everything. Michael had not been into it in weeks, and the cleaner was under strict instructions to leave it well alone. He had not worked here since he edited the last edition of Fathom. Not, of course, the actual last edition, but the last proper edition, the last edition as far as he was concerned. He set his china cup down in the fine dust and went to inspect his elderly record player. On it he found an elderly recording of some Vivaldi wind concertos, set it to play, and sat down. He waited again to see what he would do next, and suddenly found to his surprise that he was already doing it, and it was this. He was listening to the music.